Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Tamura Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins on Daf Yud 7 lines from the top. You will notice a triangle around the word boi, Romi Bar Chamo, and a few lines later, another triangle. These are explained in the outside margin under our heading Nosei Mivne. The Nosei is a topic heading, Mivne a structural note. At times we combine them into one note, as is the case over here. The triangle is featured, and we have written Shnei She'elois, there are two questions, Shel Romi Bar Chamo, that Romi Bar Chamo raises, and the word boy indicates a question, so we have two of these, Hamityachasim L'dinom Shel Makdish V'Hamiskaper. You'll see that they refer to, the questions deal with the Makdish, he is the one who sanctifies an animal as a korban, and Miskaper, the one who benefits from it, who achieves atonement through it. Oftentimes, the Makdish is the Miskaper, that is, the person who needs the atonement is the one who sanctifies the animal. But there are occasions where someone else might dedicate an animal on behalf of his friend. In that case, the two people are separate. You have the Makdish, the one who dedicates the animal, and the Miskaper, the one who benefits from the korban. The questions here are, Mi Moisif Choymesh, that's number one, who adds a fifth. In the event that a korban develops a mum, becomes blemished, and it needs to be redeemed, so there is a rule, and we discussed this in our last shiur, that the owner is the one who redeems the animal. The owner redeems it and adds a fifth. If someone else redeems the animal, there is no addition of the fifth. So we're going to try to focus on who is considered the owner with regard to adding the fifth, the Makdish or the Miskaper. If an outsider, if a non-owner redeems the animal, as we just said, there is no adding of a fifth. Mi oise tmura. Another issue that will come up is who has the ability to make tmura, to, in effect, replicate the kedusha of the animal. So who is considered the one having that power, the one who sanctifies the animal or the one who benefits from the animal? Turning to the Gemara. Boi Romi Bar Chamo. Makdish Moisif Choymesh Oy Miskaper Moisif Choymesh. As we said, the owner is the one who adds a fifth and not an outsider. So who is the owner with regard to adding a fifth? The Makdish, the one who sanctifies the animal, or the one who benefits from the animal, from the sacrifice? Omar Ravos, Rava answers, Omar Kro. The Pasuk says, V'im ha-makdish yigal es beisoi, v'asaf chamish es kesef erku cholov v'hoyolo. The Pasuk is pretty clear. It says the Makdish. Makdish Yigal means the Makdish, this one who sanctified the animal, comes to redeem it. So he then adds a fifth. That's Makdish Velo Miskaper. The Makdish, the one who dedicated the animal, has the obligation of adding a fifth and not the one who benefits from the animal. Boi Romi Bar Chamo. Makdish Oise Tmura Oi Miskaper Oise Tmura. Is it the one who dedicates the animal that has the tmura power, the ability to replicate the kedusha of this korban, of this sacrifice, onto another animal, or the miskaper, the one who benefits from the sacrifice? Omar Rava. Rava answers, Pshita de miskaper oise tmura. It's obvious that the beneficiary is the one who has the tmura power. di hamakdish oise tmura, if it were so that the one who dedicates, who sanctifies the animal, has tmura power, im kain, if that be the case, then motzinu tzibor v'shutfin oisin tmura. It would come out that a sacrifice belonging to the public or partners would be capable of being the basis of a tmura replication, and we know that the the source for tmura deals with a singular ownership, a single ownership animal, not public nor partnership-owned animal. The Gemara will elaborate on this, but before we go any further, we must take note of some of the structural aspects of this sugya. Rava just started speaking, offering the response to Rami Bar Chama's question. We should take note of the fact that the response mode of this Gemara is going to last a number of lines, and this is indicated by the tuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. This is the tuf is for teretz. After this long answer marking, there will be a dechia, and represented by the dalet that's encircled, namely a rejection of what we are going to say in the answer. And then after that, the Gemara on the in the middle of the line where the dechia ends, the Gemara will ask my havi Allah, where the Gemara wants to know bottom line, so to speak, what is the law. So in the meantime, regarding Rami Bar Chama's question, who has the tmura power? So Rava feels it's obvious that the miskaper is the one who determines the tmura, and the reason for that, reason why it's so obvious, because is that if the makdish were the one to determine the tmura of the tmura capabilities, you could have a situation where a Tzibur owned or jointly owned, Shutfin owned sacrifice would be the basis of a tmura. The Heichi Domi, the Gemara goes on, Kagon Deshavu Shliach Lagdushe, where the public appointed someone, an individual, a single person, to go and sanctify on their behalf a korban. The public needs a korban, so they appoint someone to go and acquire for them a sacrifice. And before we go further, we glance at the Rashi, Dibor Masal Im Kain. Rashi says, Im Kain de Makdish Oyset Tmur, if it were so that the one who technically sanctifies the animal, Motsinu Tmura Betzibur Veshutfin, we would then have a case where the Tmura would be a possibility on a publicly owned or jointly owned sacrifice. The Heichi Domi, and what would be the circumstances leading to that? Kagon de Shavu, Tzibur O Shutfim Shliach, like Dushi Korban Olayu, where the public or partners appointed an individual, an emissary on for them to acquire, to sanctify an animal for them. Dahashtahavi Makdish Yochid, the in this case the sanctifier, the technical sanctifier would be an individual, v'karina bei korban yochid, and we would look at it as a single korban, a single-owned korban, e basur didei azlinon, if we were to follow him. In other words, determine things based on the makdish. V'anan t'nan b'shili masnis, and we have learned at the end of the perek, hatzibor v'hashutfin ein oisin t'mura, a publicly owned or jointly owned korban does not do tmura. Elashmamino boser miskaper azlinon. So it is obvious, says Rava, that we follow the one who achieves the atonement, who benefits from the korban, in order to determine tmura. Hilkach ein korbonoi oise tmura. Therefore, this korban acquired by the shliach would not be capable of establishing tmura, however, rabbi miskaperin bo, since the beneficiaries of it are in fact the public. V'lo karina be v'korban yochid, we wouldn't refer to it as a single owned korban. V'anan gamrinu kama mimaiser de korban yochid is tmura v'lo de tzibur v'shutfin. And we learn later from in the Gemara that a single owned korban is capable of making tmura and not something owned by the tzibur nor shutfin or partners. So that in order to determine tmura, it must be that we determine things based on the miskaper and not the makdish. The Gemara goes on, the oid, and furthermore, the omar Rav Nachman omar Rav Huna Tana. Rav Nachman quotes a Tanaic source. The source saying korbanoi lashem al nizroi milvad asher tasig yodoi. That's a korban. That's a posik in the context of a nozir who brings his sacrifice at the end of his nozir period. V'chi nozir nidon beheseg yad. The word tasig yodo indicates a sensitivity to income level of individual who needs to bring a korban. This sensitivity or accounting for income level does not apply to all sacrifices, and it does not apply, amongst others, to a nozir's korban. Whether the nozir is poor or well-to-do, he brings the same kind of korban. So the term tasig yodo seems to be irrelevant to a nozir. So ha ketzat. So how are we to understand this pasuk? Korbono lashem al nizro. That phrase in the pasuk, shifrish mishelo, that refers to someone who set aside his own korban. In other words, the nozir himself set aside his own korban. Milvada shirtasi yodo, that's a reference, shifrishu lo achirim, that others set aside the korban on his behalf. Lamai hilchasa, what halacha is being referred to in this pasuk? If it's telling me about kapora, namely, that in addition to the nozir himself achieving atonement through his own sacrifice, he can achieve atonement through a sacrifice set aside for him by others. Well, pshita demechaperle matona koyovle, it's obvious. I don't need a pasuk to tell me the obvious. It's simple. It's obvious that he will achieve atonement with the korban that others set aside for him. They're basically giving him a gift of providing for him his korban needs. So that's not the point. Elo the inyan tmura. Rather, the point of this pasuk is to tell me halachas concerning tmura. V'hochi ka'omar. And thusly, the Torah is telling us. Ma kishe hifrish mishelo yoise tmura, just like when he sets aside his own sacrifice on his own behalf, it is capable of making tmura. Af kishe frishelo achirim yoise tmura, so too when others set aside on his behalf, he, the nazir, will make the tmura. Once again, just like on his own sacrifice, the nazir would be the one to make the tmura, so too when others set aside on his behalf, in other words, the others are the makdish, and he, the nazir, is the miskaper is making the tmura. Shma mino, baser miskaper, aslinon. So from this pasuk, we see that we follow the miskaper. The Gemara says, lo, that's not the point. Le'inyan, rather, le'inyan kapora. This pasuk is telling me a more basic halacha, that a person can achieve atonement through sacrifices that others set aside on his behalf. Udeko kashiloch, and you'll ask, well, matono deko yohavin le, isn't it obvious that he is able to achieve kapora through that? Is there any problem in the fact that it's a gift? It's obvious. In other words, it's obvious they're giving him a gift for his atonement, for him to achieve atonement. So to this we say, no, it's not so obvious. Ilav de rovi rachmona milvada shirtasig yodo, if not for the fact that the Torah includes this case of someone else's setting aside a korban on his behalf, havi amino, I would have thought, xeris akosav hu, I would have thought that it's a heavenly ruling that korbono mididehu demechapi midachirim lo, that a person achieves his atonement only through his own animal. and not through something others set aside for him. Chomash Molon, therefore I need Milvada Shirtasig Yod to tell me that a person achieves his atonement through korbanos, through sacrifices that others set aside for him as well. So at this point you see that we rejected the source that that was brought in earlier, that Rava had quoted Rav Nachman, who quoted Rav Huna, saying that we can see from the Nozir story the din of Tumura. Here, in the last few lines, we see this rejection, that we don't learn dinim of Tumura from there. That leads the Gemara to go ask now, my havi halacha, so what is the halacha? That we're right now still unclear regarding what Rami Bar Chama asked. The Makdish Oysa Tmura or Meskaper Oysa Tmura? The Gemara answers, Toshma, the Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Here we have 3 points of halacha, 2 of which we just discussed, that are ruled upon by Rabbi Yochanan. The first, Makdish Moisiv Choymish. This we established already above, and here the Gemara just mentions that Rabbi Yochanan rules thusly. The Makdish, the one who dedicates an animal, he is the one that when it comes to redeeming it, if he redeems it, he adds the fifth. The Makdish with regard to Choymesh is considered the owner. Umiskaper Oiset Mura. And this is what we were just dealing with, the issue of who has the Tmura power. And here we're answering, basically like Rava answered, that it's the Miskaper. The beneficiary is the one that determines the Tmura, and not someone else. And the third point is not something we discussed recently, but it says, HaTorei Mishalo Al Shel Acherim, if someone is going to tithe his friend's produce, namely, you have two people here and they have untithed produce, so Mr. A removes from his produce the tithes that Mr. B needs to take off of his own stuff. So that being the case, that works. And Tovas Hano Shelo. Tovas Hano is a concept of the value or the amount someone would pay to an owner of produce to give the tithes to a specific Kohen. You might have a person that has a grandson that's a Kohen, and he wants his grandson to receive a Truma tithe. So this grandfather sees someone tithing his produce, he'll offer him money to direct the tithes to his grandson. That amount is called Toivas Hanos. So now, if you have Mr. A tithing on behalf of Mr. B, and someone offers money to have that tithe given to his grandson, who receives this money? Is it the one who's separating the produce, or the second party, the individual who is going to benefit by this tithe being separated? Is it the Toreim or the beneficiary? Who receives this Tovas Hanal payment from some grandfather that wants his grandson to receive the Truma? So Rabbi Yochanan says that the Tovas Hanal belongs to the Toreim, the one who is separating the fruits, and not the beneficiary of the separation of the tithing. My Taimo, what is the reason for this? Omar Kro es kol ma'asar tvuoscho v'nosato. And Rashi explains, kol ma'asar tvuoscho, hischal lasir, when you finish your tithing, mashma misha notal ha'maiser mitvuo shebiyodo. It implies that the one who did the actual separation of his produce, litno lemishi yirtze, to give it to whomever he wants, v'lo biad chavero shenitram olov. And it's not the one to determine this is not the one who is the beneficiary of the tithing. Toivas Hano is Dover Muat Mekabel Mi Israel Menash Yitain Kol Shumoisov Leben Bita Kohen. That's what we describe, that Toivas Hano is the payment. It's a small payment, it's a fraction of the value of the produce, but it's that amount that someone would pay to direct the tithes to a specific Kohen. the Mishnah. Ein memirin lo evorim beubrin velo ubrim beivorim. Tmura cannot be accomplished when, if you were to attempt to transfer the or replicate the kedusha that are on ubrin. Ubrin are unborn embryos that have sanctity, and you try to replicate their sanctity onto limbs of chulin animals. That does not work. Rashi elaborates a bit here. Lo evorim dechulin. Rashi adds the word dechulin. The limbs of a chulin animal cannot receive the tmura beubrin dehekdesh. Shem Omar. If a person said, "Tei regel behema zu," I want the leg of this chulin animal to be tmuras ubar hekdesh shebeimei behema zu, to be the replication of the kedusha of the sanctity on the embryo in this animal, in this other animal. Ein hakedusha chola aver. Sanctity will not settle upon that particular limb. So that's one thing that doesn't work. The second thing was the other way around. Velo ubrin beivorim. You know, sanctity cannot be set upon the unborn chulin animal through the sanctity that exists on the limb of a korban. Velo ubrin veivorim beshlemim. Nor can you have sanctity set upon the unborn or limbs of chulin animals through shleim and through complete hegdish animals. In other words, you can't do a tmura from a korban onto an embryo or onto a limb. Velo shleimin bohem. Nor can you replicate the kedusha by using a basis of it the limbs or unborn holy animals and have their holiness transferred onto a complete chulin animal. Rabbi Yossi Oymer, Memirin Evorim Bishleimen. Rabbi Yossi, he says, well, let's read that again. Rabbi Yossi Oymer, Memirin Evorim Bishleimen, Avolo Shleimen Bohen. Rabbi Yossi says that you can have a tmura from a Shleimen, from a complete hegdish animal onto the limb of a chulin animal, but not have a complete chulin animal receive the kedusha from the limb of a sanctified of a korban. Omer Rabbi Yossi, Valo, and Rabbi Yossi continues arguing his point by saying, Valo b'mukdoshim, when it comes to sanctifying an animal, we're talking about an initial sanctity. Ha'oime raglo shel zu oilof, a person makes a declaration by saying, I want the leg of this chulin animal to be to have ola sanctity, kula ola, the entire animal becomes sanctified. We call this the spreading sanctity phenomenon. Af kishiyoyma raglo shel zu tachazu, likewise, when one establishes sanctity through tmura, by saying, I want the leg of this chulin animal to be kodesh, through the leg of this, through the complete holy animal. That's a limb of chulin through the shalema, a shlemim of hekdish. Tehe kula tmura tachtel. So the entire chulin animal would become kodesh through this spreading kedusha phenomenon. Before going ahead in the Gemara, let us glance to the outside margin under our Nosei heading. This is a Nosei that's going to last a long time. We have an indication here that it goes to Daf Yud Aleph Omed Aleph. Machlokes Bar Padov Rabbi Yochanan, a controversy between these two authorities. E Kedusha Cholo Al Ubrin, can sanctity be imposed upon the unborn? Kigon hamakdish uber b'meimo. Imagine you have a pregnant chulin animal, and you say, "I want to sanctify or dedicate the unborn, the fetus of this chulin animal." Does that take hold? So the Gemara starts itmar bar pada omar ein kedusha chola al ubrin. Rabbi Yochanan omar kedusha chola al ubrin. We'll go over these points again by looking at some Rashi, but there is some significant structural business that we want to take care of before we go further, just to give a general map of this sugya. You'll notice that there's a bracketed section. The length of this bracketed section can be established by looking at the bracket length indicator. This is a vertical dash dotted line that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. If you follow this, it will take you down a number of lines down the top, from the top of maybe about a quarter of the way down the top of Omid Beis, after which you see the Gemara says, Yosef Rabbi Zera. We circled Rabbi Zera's name, Yosef Rabbi Zera, Komer Loha Shmaitza, where Rabbi Zera is saying over Bar Pada's opinion that Kedusha is not Chal on Ubrin. At that point in the Gemara, a triangle will appear, whose point is facing upwards, which represents will be a question on Bar Pada. In fact, as you skim down the page, you'll notice a number of triangles. On Omid Beis, you have four of these triangles with their point facing up. We have a numbering scheme to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text on Omid Beis, where you can see, by looking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text over there, these numbers. These all represent questions on Bar Pada's sheet. But after each question is raised, Bar Pada offers an answer, in other words, defending his opinion. We will come back to this structural note later. Turning our attention back to the bottom of Yud Amud Aleph, this is noted already by our double star that you see after Bar Pada's Shita stated that Ein Kedusha Chal Ubrin, we have a double star in the Gemara text, drawing your attention to the inside margin where we have a note, He'ora, we make a note. Be'omid Beis, HaGemara Taksha al Bar Pada min Mispar Makoros Beinei Mishnasenu. On Omid Beis, the Gemara will attack Bar Pada's Shita from a number of different sources, and amongst them is an attack based on our Mishnah, where we will see that apparently Kedusha, sanctification, can be imposed on the unborn, the as-yet unborn fetus, the as-of-yet unborn animal inside the Hulin mother. We made note of the brackets. The bracket purpose has an explanation. You'll notice there's a little star, a singular star, which draws your attention to the inside margin, where we've written Achrei Hasograim, after the bracketed section. Yofia Sidro Shem Kushios, there'll appear a series of questions, Mimukoros, from different sources. Al Shitas Bar Pada, the questions are directed against Bar Pada. Besoch Hasograim, within the brackets, HaGemora Dono, Betzorch Rabbi Yochanan Lameid Eshitoso B'Shnei Mekomos. What is the necessity of Rabbi Yochanan saying his point of view on two separate occasions? Generally speaking, we would assume it would be sufficient for someone to state their opinion once, and then we would apply it wherever necessary. In this case, though, Rabbi Yochanan seems to state his opinion twice in two different ways, and the Gemara will want to know why. And we also, in addition to this, we have a topic heading on the outside margin, and we've indicated that this topic heading is Besoch HaSograim. It's a reference to the discussion of the Gemara in the bracketed section. Tzrichusa l'shnei halachas Rabbi Yochanan, the necessity of Rabbi Yochanan stating two times his halacha, the oimrim that says kedusha chol al ubar, that sanctity can be imposed on an ubar, on an as yet unborn animal. Unborn meaning it's in its fetal state. Now that we have a general overview of the Gemara, and the main point is that Bar Pada's opinion will be the focus of the Gemara's attention on Omid Beis, let's proceed ahead now with the Gemara where we are. The Ozda, Rabbi Yochanan Latame, we're reading the Gemara four lines from the bottom in the brackets. Rabbi Yochanan, in saying that sanctity can be imposed on a fetus, uh, Instead of reading the Gemara, let me just backtrack a bit. Even though we offered an explanation of the Gemara outside, let us look at a Rashi. Rashi in that says Ein Kedusha at the beginning of the Gemara commentary at the bottom. Ein Kedusha Chal al Uber. This is Bar Pano's opinion. Im Hikdish Uber B'mei Imo. If a person sanctified a fetus inside its mother, Eino Kadosh Likrav. It doesn't gain a level of sanctity that would enable it to be offered as a sacrifice. The im makriv lei kishenolad velo akdushay mishenolad. If he would take this animal that he dedicated while it was unborn, it was then born, and he didn't make a rededication and simply brought it as is as a sacrifice. Maisi chulin lazar. This would be a violation of bringing the mundane into the temple courtyard. That's called chulin lazar, and that's an offense. V'im hifrish chatos muberes, if this person has set aside a sin offering, a chatos that happened to be pregnant, lo havu kishtei chatos lachrayas, this would not be viewed as if someone set aside two separate sin offerings, one serving as a backup, as an insurance for the other. It would not be considered as two separate chatas offerings. Why? The ubar mikoach ime hu de kaddish below mikoach atzmo. The sanctity, as far as Bar Pada is concerned, the sanctity of the fetus is coming through its mother, v'lo mikoach atzmo, and not on its own. In other words, as far as Bar Pada is concerned, it lacks its own identity. V'havi kivlad chatos ulemisa ozil, and is therefore viewed as the offspring of a chatos, and its destiny is one of death. That is one of the rules regarding their chatos. There are five rules that apply to chatos that established that a chatos is to be sent off to be killed and not offered as a sacrifice. Without getting into all the five different examples, one of them is called Vlad Chatos. So that, as far as Bar Pada is concerned, since the fetus does not have its own identity, but rather in this case, if one set aside a pregnant Chatos, as far as Bar Pada is concerned, it would be no different than an animal that was set aside as a chatos and subsequently became pregnant, where everyone agrees that's a vlad chatos. Here too, this is considered the same. V'chein b'chol dvorov, harehu kivlad kodshim v'lo kitchilas hegdish. As far as Bar Pada is concerned, fetuses inside sacrifices are derivative sanctity and not something that gained their own initial sanctity. And as far as the opening case, if one attempts to, one sets aside, one has a chulin animal and attempts to impose an initial sanctity on a ubar, it would not, the ubar being the embryo, it would not take hold. Okay, that is a complete picture, we'll say, of Bar Pada's opinion. Now, we return to the bracketed section. After stating Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that one can impose sanctity onto a fetus by itself. As far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, a fetus has its own identity and has the ability to absorb Kedusha. The also Rabbi Yochanan Litame, the Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Hikdish Chatos Muberes Vialda. Rabbi Yochanan tells us that if a person set aside a sin offering that happened to be pregnant, and it then gave birth, rotza bo miskapir, rotza bivloda miskapir, he has a choice of using either the mother or the offspring for his atonement. The other one, the one that you don't use, is not considered a vlad chatos, but is something that's basically a chatos that you're not using, and we would set it aside, let it graze till it develops a blemish, and it can be redeemed. Let us look at the Rashi on this. Rotsa bevloda miskapir, dechi amrinon vlad chatos lemis osil. the rule that says offspring of chatos is to be set off, to set aside, to die. Hainu hecho de matrish chatos of nisabro of yolda. That concerns a case where a person was not dealing with a pregnant animal, but rather a non-pregnant animal, and dedicated a non-pregnant animal as a chatos, and then subsequently, before he brought it as a sacrifice, it became pregnant and gave birth. The halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, an oral law, the oral law states, halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim ninu, that chomesh chatos mesos, the five different cases of a chatos that are set to die. V'hachig miri lo demeson, we have learned thusly that they die. Aval I aflusha muberes, if however he set aside a pregnant animal, choshuv ubor kebehimo acheres, this is Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, the ubor has its own identity, it's viewed as a separate entity, v'chaylo le kedusha be'abbe nafsho, and it has sanctity on its own merit, and it would be tantamount to setting aside two separate animals as a sin offering, the one serving as a backup for the other. If something happens to one, he can use the other. He receives an atonement, his atonement through either one that he wants. The other one is set aside to graze till it develops a mum and is then redeemed. But the main point is it's not set aside to die. Almo kedusha chola al ha'uber. From this, we see that Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that a separate sanctity, independent of the mother, can take hold of a fetus. So, having learned Rabbi Yochanan in the brackets, which we labeled number two, we're in effect seeing the same principle that a separate sanctity sets upon the fetus. The Gemara now points out Utsricha. I need both of these Rabbi Yochanan lochas. Utsricha is an answer to the unasked question of why do I need Rabbi Yochanan to state this principle that the fetus has its own identity vis-a-vis sanctity. So why is it that I need both of these halachas? The Gemara proceeds. The I Ashmina Bahach Kamaisa, had we taught the number one halacha, that Kedusha can be chal on an ubar, if I had only that, I would say, Hosam hu de akdeshe leubra gufe. We're now at the top of Amud Beis. That is where he set us, where he dedicated, he focused his sanctification on the fetus, where it was a focused sanctification. So we say there the fetus derives its own sanctity. He had a chulin animal and did not dedicate the mother. The chulin is the common or mundane animal, the non-sanctified animal. He didn't direct his kedusha to the mother. He focused it on the ubar. Avol hocha, de'akdeshe li'imei, hu b'chlal imei lo kadosh. Here, in the second halacha, where the person focused his sanctification on the mother, so I would have thought that the ubar is not included in that kedusha, that it doesn't absorb kedusha because he wasn't focused on the ubar. The I Ashmina Basraisa, and had I taught you the second case where he set aside a pregnant animal as a sacrifice, and we said there that the ubar gains sanctity. Hosam hu de'akdeshe lo v'chol de'isba. That might very well be a case where he sanctified the mother, and in doing so, he was sanctifying it and everything in it. Avol hocha de'akdeshe lei. But in the case, in the number one case where he directed his sanctity on the ubar alone, kevon de lesse avroi, since it's not outside, it's something internal, lo kaddish, I would have been left to think that it doesn't become sanctified. Tzricha, therefore, I have to tell you halacha number one as well. Lishna Achrina, another version of this presentation. My Komash Molon. What is Rabbi Yochanan telling us? What's the principle that he is telling us when he said that if you set aside a pregnant animal as a sin offering, Rabbi Yochanan is telling us that you can use either the mother or the offspring for atonement. So what principle is he teaching us? Answer, Im Shairo Mishuyar. If he were to leave it aside, in other words, if he had said that I want the mother to be a sin offering and the offspring to be something else, in other words, I want the offspring, the vlad, the embryo, to be an ola, or if he said I want the mother to be a chatos and I want the vlad to be unsanctified, to be a chulin, so it would take hold. His statement would be of validity. The ubar lav yerech imohu, and the vlad is not considered like the leg of the mother, simply as an extension of the mother, but rather having its own identity. So this concept of im shairo mishuyar, this is what Rav Yochanan is teaching us when he says, if one were to set aside a pregnant chatos, and he has a choice of using either the mother or the offspring, by the fact that we don't say the offspring is set aside to die, so it's not viewed as a vlad chatos, as simple extension of the mother. And if it were viewed as vlad chatos, we mentioned earlier, it would have been one of the five chatos hamesos. But Rabbi Yochanan doesn't say that. So we learn that Rabbi Yochanan views the embryo as a separate entity. And that is what's reflected by this term im shairo mishuyar. And now we're in this second lashon vitarti lomali. We're going over what we said before, according to this version. Why do I need both halachas of Rabbi Yochanan? In other words, like we said earlier, had I just been taught the first halacha, that a person can dedicate the ubar as a sacrifice on its own, I see from that it's a separate entity. And would I not have been able to extrapolate from that to a case where a person dedicated a pregnant animal as a chatos, that the vlad, that the embryo, has its own identity and is not considered a vlad chatos? So here the Gemara says, I really need to be taught both explicitly. De'i itmar, and we do have a long answer marking here. You can see on the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, the tuf, that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. So the Gemara says, De'i itmar baha, if I had told you this case, mishum de'ime chazio legufe, migu de'nochto kedushala nochto nami levlad, where he dedicated the mother herself as the sacrifice and imposed on the mother a kedushas aguf, we say since the kedusha set upon the mother, so the kedusha is able to settle upon the offspring as well. Aval idach lo, but where you focused the kedusha on the embryo, I would not have known that sanctity can settle upon the embryo itself. Komash malon dechola al chada. So we are informed that sanctity can settle upon the embryo by itself and not on the mother. V'idmar b'ha, had I taught just that case, mishum dekom meforesh kedusha al havlad. There I understand the embryo becomes holy because he focused his sanctification on the embryo. Avol hahi lo. But where you dedicated an animal as a pregnant animal as a chatos, I would not have known that the embryo gets a separate chatos status or any other status for that matter, because I didn't focus my sanctification on the vlad. Sricha, therefore, I have to tell you that even in that case, the vlad gets its own separate sanctity. And it's not considered a mere vlad chatos. Yosef Rabbi Zeira v'Ka'omar Laha Shmaitza. Now we turn our attention back to Bar Pado. Rabbi Zeira is sitting and saying over Bar Pado's teaching. That's v'Ka'omar Laha Shmaitza de Bar Pado. That Kedusha cannot settle upon an embryo. Eisvei, we have a question directed on against Bar Pada. As we mentioned earlier, the triangles represent a series of questions against Bar Pada. We have a topic, heading, and structural note in the outside margin, the Nosei Mivneh. You notice a triangle is featured with a point facing up and the term Ma'akav. Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back, the give-and-take style of the Gemara. Sidra Shel Kushio Soshitas Bar Pada will see a series of questions directed against Bar Pada, mi Mekoros, from different sources, Shemehen Mashma, from which it is apparent, appears, the Efshir Lahaktish Uber Bifnasma, that it is possible to impose a separate sanctity on a fetus by itself. After the questions are raised with their respective sources, Bar Pada will respond, and that's indicated by the inverted triangle. Those are the tshuvos. Before actually learning the Gemara, I would like to request of everyone to scan the sukkah, looking over the daf, if one notices that after each question and answer there appears a bracketed section. You'll notice a bracket length indicator, that's the vertical dash dotted line, and on this Amid you'll see it appearing on the to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. These are sections that are explained by our note that we have on the inside margin. You'll notice there's a starred section, a starred note, and it reads as follows: Haktoyim Hashonim Shemofim B'Sugrayim Ad Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The sections that appear in brackets, and they will appear again and again, bracketed sections until Yud Aleph Amud Aleph Einom L'Shem Dilug. The bracketing here is not for the purpose of skipping. Elo Levodeid. Rather, it's here to isolate Ha-diyunim al-ha-tshuvos shenitnos al-kol-kushi v'kushio besidrus ha-kushios al-bar-pada. There'll be a series of answers, basically. After each question, there is an answer. There will be then a discussion on each one of the answers as they appear. Klomar, yesh kan besugyo kushios. In this sugyo, you see questions as represented by the triangles with the point facing up. Those are kushios al-bar-pada u-tshuvos, and answers with as represented by the triangle with its point facing down. I'll call tshuva on each answer kayemas diyun livchon tshuvos elu. As the Gemara presents each answer, there will be then a discussion concerning the validity of those answers. Be'emtzaut hasograyim, using the brackets, Nitan lahavdil bein hakushos utshuvos lebein hadiyunim al hatshuvos. We'll be able to distinguish between the questions and answers directed at Bar Pada. You have a basic question answer with regard to Bar Pada, and then in the bracketed sections are it we'll call internal discussions concerning the validity of each one of the answers. So now that we've mapped out the sugya, hopefully in a clear fashion, we turn to the Gemara, to the first question on Bar Pada. Eisvei Rabbi Yirmiyah the Rabbi Zera. The question lasts a few lines, as the long question marking indicates, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Rabbi Yirmiyah asks Rabbi Zera representing Shitas Bar Pada. We have a Tanaic source. This Tanaic source deals with the topic of Bechor, firstborn. Firstborn male animals are given to a Kohen as a gift to the Kohen. is there a way to circumvent, we'll say, the need to give a firstborn male animal to a Kohen? This source will feature a technique whereby a person who anticipates his animal giving birth to a firstborn, and it may turn out to be a male animal, and if it's a male, if he doesn't do anything, it's going to go to a Kohen. A person can actually avoid giving the Bechor to a Kohen by doing the following. However, you'll see that he'll end up using this animal for his own purposes, his own sacrificial purposes. Ketzad ma'arimin al ha'bechor. Ma'arimin, the word ha'aroma indicates a type of trick, or we'll call, in this case, circumvention. So how does one circumvent the halacha of bechor? Mevakeres shehoisa meruberes. A person who has an animal that is about to give birth for its first time. That's the term mivakeres. The root of that word is bechor. You know, an animal experiencing its first birth. Omer, he shall say. Ma, we might point out just another very important detail, and that is a bechor does not gain its bechor status, its holy status that labels it a bechor, a halachic bechor, until it emerges from the birth canal. In other words, as long as the animal is in its fetal status, its fetal state, it doesn't have the sanctity of a firstborn. So a person, before the fetus is born, before it emerges from through the birth canal, he says, "Ma shebimeelha shelzu im zocharhu oila." That which is inside this mother animal, if it happens to be a male, I want to dedicate it as an ola sacrifice. And here we're talking about a person that might have had an obligation to bring a korban ola. Now he wants to take advantage of this situation for acquiring his ola. So yolda zohar, if this animal then gives birth to a male and it's a firstborn birth, harezu ola. Here, lo and behold, it will become an ola because of his dedication. Now, let's not lose sight of the forest for the trees. What is the point of bringing this in? Alma kadosh ubar. We see from this story that a person can impose a sanctity on the as yet unborn. And that is against bar pada. Omar Le. So Rabbi Zeira answers, Ki tanyo hahi, that Tanaic source that indicates a sanctity setting upon the embryo, that's Bekedushas Domim. That's a reference to a sanctity of value. In other words, when the animal is born, so it will be sold or exchanged for money, and its money will be used for buying whatever korban he designated. But it's not an indication that a kedushas haguf, an actual sacrificial sanctity, can be imposed on it, on the embryo. Rashi says, kedushas domim, shim kerenu, v'yavi b'dom of oila. He'll sell this newborn, when it's born, he'll sell it and use the money for an ola. Aval hu gufei lo kodesh kedushas haguf, ela nimkar b'lo mum. It itself doesn't have sacrificial sanctity, but rather is sold even if it doesn't have a blemish, because the rule of needing a blemish applies only to animals that have inherent sacrificial sanctity. This has value sanctity, whereby its value must be used for buying a korban, but not itself. It not itself brought as a korban. If we were to skip the bracketed section, you'll notice a triangle appears immediately after that, Esve, which is another question on Bar Pada. However, in the meantime, let's focus on the bracketed section. The Gemara asks, Mi Alima, the word Alima means strength. Mi alima kedushas domim, does value sanctity have the strength to kamifke ale min habachora, to obviate or remove the animal from bechor status? After all, in a manner of speaking, kedushas domim is a lower level of sanctity than something that would have kedushas haguf. And what we're saying here is you're imposing on this embryo the lower form of kedusha, kedushas domim, and it is able to preempt the kedushas, the bechor kedusha status of setting upon this embryo. So the question is, does this lower level of sanctity have that power of undoing or preempting bechor status? Omarle in, so he answers, yes, it does. V'hatnan, and support is brought from the following. And here we have an answer that takes a few lines to develop, as indicated by our long answer marking. You see the tuft that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. So the Gemara says, V'hatnan, kol hakotshim shekidam mum kavua le'egdeshan. All animals that were dedicated, however, they were dedicated as animals already blemished. The blemish appeared before his sanctifying, v'niftu, and then they are redeemed. Chayovin b'vechora uv'matanos. Now, it should be pointed out that sanctifying a blemished animal imposes on the animal nothing more than a kedushas domim. It's a type of animal that's never going to end up as an actual sacrifice because it's blemished. It's already blemished at the outset. So you're dealing with a case of kedushas domim, and this source tells us that this animal that was dedicated as a sacrifice, but having a mum beforehand, after it's redeemed, if it's an animal that has not given birth yet to any offspring, and it experiences its first birth, so chayovim bivachora, you'll have to give that offspring to a kohen uvematanos, and when you shecht this animal after it's been redeemed, you'll have to give a kohen the various limbs that are part of the matnas kahuna, the gift to the kohen, which we call which are the zra lechayev keva. Now, looking at the source, we make an inference. Taimo de la'achar sheniftu de chayovin. Why is there a bechor obligation? That is true after you redeemed it. After redeeming this animal that you dedicated with the blemish, it becomes a common animal, and as such has the rules that apply to common animals, namely chiyuv bechora, hafroshes matonas, avol koidem sheniftu pturin. But if you haven't as yet redeemed it, so you have this animal that was dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash with a blemished animal that you had dedicated as a sacrifice, and you have not as yet redeemed it. So then we can infer from this source that Pturim, that would be exempt from Bechora. Alma, we see from here, the Alima Kedushas Domim, that there is strength to Kedushas Domim, a value sanctity, the Mifka Le'me Bechora, that it is able to preempt a Bechora obligation from ever taking hold. Esve, and as we indicated before, another question focused against Bar Pada. Ha'oimer mashe b'me'a shezu oilo? If a person makes a dedication and says that which is inside this pregnant animal shall be an ola, muteres begiza, the mother can be shorn, the asura bavoda, but you cannot work with the mother. You can't use the mother to plow. Mishum kichush ubar sheba, because that may weaken the embryo that this mother is carrying. So we see that the embryo has become sanctified, and we don't want to diminish in any way, shape, or form that which has already been sanctified. So by the fact that the mother is forbidden to be used in work because of concern for the embryo, the as-yet-unborn, it shows us that this as-yet-unborn does absorb sanctity. And that's a kasha on Bar Pada. Omar Lei, so Rabbi Zera will answer, Ha Nami Kedushas Domim. The sanctity referred to here is a sanctity, the embryo sanctity is one of value and not of inherent, of an inherent nature. Namely, the Ubar will not be brought itself as a korban, and that's in accordance with what Bar Pada taught. However, there is Kedushas Domim, which is something that Bar Pada was not addressing, and hence there's no question. Once again, you can see we have a bracketed section. You can use the bracket length indicator to see how long it is, and then following it, a triangle, and which we call number 3. So now, the bracketed section raises the question, analyzing this answer, and it asks, Umi alimo kedushas domim de osra la be'avoda? Does kedushas domim have enough strength to restrict the mother from being used in avoda because of our concern for the offspring? Amale in v'hot pran. Yes, kedushas domim is a sufficient reason to restrict the restrict it from avoda, as we see in the following Tanaic source: Yoitzin lechulin ligazes v'lovein. This is a continuation of the source we saw earlier, namely animals that had been dedicated with a mum, with a prior mum, which is an example of kedushas domim. Once they are redeemed, they become chulin and they can be shorn and worked with. So you see that taima de mishum de niftu. Why can it be worked? Why can you work with the animal? Because it has been redeemed. Ha kodem sheniftu, prior to its redemption. Once again, the case of one having sanctified a blemished animal as a sacrifice, prior to its redemption, asurin bavoda, you cannot use it for work. Alma kedushas domim asurin le bavoda. We see from here that something that has kedushas domim cannot be used for avoda because of our concern of its being weakened. Esve, again, we have a question focused against Bar Pada. This is a quote from our Mishnah. Ein memirin lo evorin beubrin v'lo ubrin beevorin. Tamura cannot be accomplished when going from an ubar that's sanctified, and you want to transfer its sanctity onto the limbs of a chulin animal, and likewise, You cannot go from the limb of a sanctified animal and have the sanctity of the limb replicated onto the ubar of a chulin animal. Now, our Mishnah is focusing on the laws of tumura. The Gemara points out, Emuri hu delo memer, uborim, unborn, do not function as a source of tumura. Ha mikdash kachi. However, they themselves can gain independent sanctity, initial sanctity. The Rashi explains a few lines down before, toward the end of the narrow lines, that Rashi says, Ha mikdash kachi ubrin. The ubrin apparently do get their own initial sanctity, the ilo kachu. If an ubar wouldn't gain its own initial sanctity, pshito the ein mamirin shleimen dechulin bohen, then it would be obvious that which the Mishnah teaches, that I wouldn't be able to do tmura from the ubar onto a complete chulin animal. Well, of course, if the ubar doesn't have sanctity, so there's no, you don't even have the basis for starting a tmura. So we see from the Mishnah that Tmura does not work when you use the ubar that is sanctified as a jumping off point, but you do see that the ubar has its own sanctity. All the Mishnah is teaching us is that the sanctity that the ubar has cannot be used as the basis of a tmura, and that's based on a pasuk. The pasuk says, by tmura it says, behemo ba behemo, and ubar is not called a behemo. The main point for us, though, is to realize that the ubar, the embryo, has its own inherent kedusha. And that's a kasha on Bar Pada. Omar Le, Rabbi Zeira says, the Mishnah is talking about the Vlode Kochim, who the Kaddishi Vekaimi. This is talking about the offspring of animals themselves, as of mothers that were sanctified as korbanos. And we indicate Omar Aleph, if you have sanctified a mother animal that was not pregnant, and it subsequently became pregnant, so there the ubar is called Vlad Kochim, and it has sanctity. But that's not a function of mine having directed sanctification on an existing ubar. So in the case of Vlade Kochim, the offspring of sacrificial animals, so that was what the Mishnah was talking about, and that's not the topic that Bar Pada was addressing. Again, you see a bracketed section, following which there will be a question number 4. Now the bracketed section. E Vlad Kochim, if the source that we just got finished learning as a question on Bar Pada had been speaking about Vlad Kochim as Rabbi Zeira answered, then Bemeye Imon Hu Delo Avdin Ha Avroi Avdin, are we to infer therefore that when it's inside the mother as an ubar, so it doesn't affect a tmura. However, once it would be born, it would be able to affect a tmura. V'hotnan, but have we not learned ein havlad oise tmura, that vlodois kochim, animals born from animals that had been sanctified, do not affect tmura. They cannot be the basis of a tmura. So that by giving the answer to this, we'll call the number 3 question source, our Mishnah that is, as referring to Vlodois Kochim in order to explain how the embryo has Kedusha, yeah, but the inference doesn't check out, because the inference is that only as an embryo it doesn't make tmura, but at once it would be born it would make tmura. But we know that Vlados Kochim, even when they're born, they do not make tmura. So the Gemara answers, Ha Moni, this is Ha Moni Rabbi Yudahi, Diomar HaVlad Olse Tmura. In other words, like we try to infer, that only as an embryo it won't affect a tmura, but once it's born, it does make tmura. And that is because this is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, who holds, unlike this most recent source that said, Ein Avlad Oisa Tmura, Rabbi Yehuda says Avlad is Oisa Tmura. Question, E Rabbi Yehuda, if it's in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, Tmura hu delo avdi Ha Mikdash Kachi, regarding the Avorim. This question now is focusing on the issue of limbs. So we're getting off the focus on embryos for a moment and now focusing on limbs. In our Mishnah, the source that we're now ascribing to Rabbi Yehuda, we said that as far as limbs are concerned, that limbs do not make tmura. However, the implication is, or one can infer, but limbs could be sanctified. But that doesn't check out with Rabbi Yehuda. Ho Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Evorim lo kachi. But later in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda is reported as having said that limbs do not absorb sanctity. So let's go over this last point. If we're saying that our Mishnah, from which we asked question number 3, which also deals with limbs, so we would infer that a limb cannot be the basis of a tmura. If one wanted to replicate the kedusha of the limb of a sacrifice onto something that's chulin, so that wouldn't work. But that implies that an initial sanctity can be imposed on a limb. But that presents a problem, because we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds otherwise. The Gemara answers, Hocha b'mayaskinan, when we are speaking about limbs, we're talking about be'ever shanashoma tluyabo, a vital limb or vital organ That is the kind of limb that we are featuring here with the inference. Namely, that if you try to, let us say, do a tmura from the heart of a sanctified animal and replicate the kedusha of the heart onto a chulin animal, so that would not work. However, if you were to sanctify the heart of an animal, being that you're dealing with a vital organ, the entire animal would become sanctified. Esvei. Now, you notice this is a fourth question focused against Bar Pada. Esvei. Makdishin Evorim V'ubrin Avolo Memirin. Now, this seems to be a very clear attack on Bar Pada. It says one can sanctify limbs and embryos and just not use them as a basis for Tamura. The Gemara answers, Hochonami bevlode kochim. Here too, this is referring to the offspring of an animal, a mother that has been sanctified. So that the that case of unborn does absorb kedusha, but it's absorbing kedusha through its mother. At this point, you'll notice a bracketed section, and this is a very long bracketed section. You can use the bracket length indicator to see actually how long it lasts. It takes you down basically halfway down Yud Aleph Omid Aleph, going way beyond the purview of our shiur today. However, it's important to see that after this bracketed section on Daf Yud Aleph Omid Aleph, there appears another triangle with a number 5 accompanying it. Hence, a fifth question will be raised against Bar Pada, followed by a response. The question number 5 itself is a rather long question. The Gemara, though, as we've seen up till now, will be raising a question on this particular answer. If you're saying that this source that says Makdishin Evorim V'Ubrin is referring to Vladei Kochim, so just to get a feel of the start of this problem, we continue reading, Eib Vladei Kochim, my Makdishin. The word Makdishin would seem to be out of order. HaKadishi V'Kaimi. They are already, these Vlados are already sanctified through my having sanctified the mother, the mother that's as yet unpregnant. The mother has sanctity when it becomes pregnant. So the sanctity then just transfers, flows on to the embryo without my having to impose a sanctity. And yet the word makdishin implies that I am imposing a separate kedusha onto the vlad. That is the question. The Gemara at the top of Yud Aleph Omer Aleph answers, Hochi Komar, a new understanding or a restatement of this particular source is as follows. Makdishin Evorin Umimirin Bohen. One can sanctify limbs and they can be the basis of a tmura. Avolo mimirin evorin bohen, but one cannot do a tmura from a sanctified animal onto a limb. V'ubrin shekotshu b'mei imon ein mimirin bohen. Now, as you can see, this is presenting a new understanding of the ubar, and as you can see, the word makdishin is not focused on the ubar, but rather the ubar that had become sanctified through its mother, so it cannot serve as the basis of a tmura. Amir Sashem, when we get to our next shir, when we have a shir on Daf Yud Aleph, so we will go over this particular section in order to learn it in a complete way. In other words, we'll pick up from the question number 4 and then learn this entire section straight through. But with this, we conclude our shiur for today.